Mr. W.R. Page, Reel 5. Was the food that you got English-style food or Indian-style food?
Oh, no, it was all in English-style food. We had English, our own cooks from the RAF cooks doing the business. They had some Indians helping out to clean the vegetables, but the cooking and that was all supervised and done by our own cooks in the camp.
Who provided the food?
Well, they used to have a contract with the local contractor that used to supply the food to the canteen. And he used to they used to have these contracts for the three messes, the sergeant's mess, the officer's mess, and the other ranks mess, or dining room, as we used to call it. The kitchens used to be, there was a big building, the kitchens were annexed by a large room that was the dining room that we used to collect our food from the server and then go and sit down and eat it. And the Indians used to have Indians come along picking up the dirty plates and taking them away.
Was the food sufficient for you, or did you find that you had need to go to the canteen very frequently?
No, the food was ample, really. Although we used to go to the canteen at night times and have a steak and eggs or something like this when we were drinking, but it was really a habit rather than an actual a necessity. There was ample diets there. And plenty of green vegetables and things of this sort as well.
Did you find that the food was suitable for Indian conditions in the hot weather? I mean, it was English-style food.
Oh, yes, it was suitable. We used to be given quinine, I think it was, to drink, and something else. I can't remember what it was now. We used to be given quite a bit of... So we were advised to eat a lot of salt, too, with our meals. The medical officer of health used to come round and inspect the food every so often to see that it was up to standard and suitable.
How much attention was paid to health and sanitation whilst you were in the RAF in India?
Oh, there was a tremendous amount of attention given to the ablutions and toilets side of the living conditions, and in your own billets where you slept. We used to have an inspection every morning, but the inspection was really to check up and see that the bearers had done their job properly, because it was very clean, very clean. But we weren't responsible for it. We had nothing to do with keeping our own cells clean and the beds or anything like that. We used to have a barber who used to come around and shave us in the morning. We used to lay in bed, and he used to work on a weekly contract, and quite often I've awakened and been awakened by the rather coalish lather that was being run over my face, because he used to have a little charcoal burner to keep the water warm. And of course, when you came to the last customer, quite often the water was absolutely full of other people's whiskers, you know. He could hardly get his brush into the water. And I often laughed when I've sat there, laid there having it done, and thought how these people must have heard some of our boys talking about these black bastards, and there he was with a really great razor around your throat with you half asleep, unable to protect yourself even if you wanted to. I thought they could take their revenge if they wanted to take it out on us.
So, coming back to the arrangements for health and sanitation, you thought that the official arrangements were satisfactory.
Yeah.
Did you yourself have to take any additional personal precautions with regard to health, as regards food or water or anything like that?
No, none whatever. Of course, a hell of a lot of our time was spent on athletic sport and things of this sort. See, I would be down in the gym three, perhaps four nights a week, either boxing or something of this sort. In the evenings, we'd probably be rugby practicing or football. We were all very fit physically. I would say the whole crowd were very fit people, and the food certainly never had, as far as I can recall, anybody ever having any tummy upsets, I must say. I can't remember any. There may have been some time, but I can't remember one.
You said that you got seriously ill yourself with malaria. Was it malaria that you got?
Yeah. That was because... it's very difficult to know why and how it happened, but thinking back, I can remember I was laying down on the bed one evening, and I'd got my mosquito net pulled over me. But quite often, if you were laying there and it was hot, your arms would open out, so you were laying on your back with your arms away from your body and on the edge of the mosquito net. And the mosquito would be on the outside of the net and sting your back of your hand. And I can remember feeling this when I was asleep. And then the next thing I knew that I was in hospital. Apparently, after that happened, we all used to get up and go to the canteen for a glass of beer, and I collapsed on the way there, so they whipped me into hospital. And I got this very serious malaria, and it seems that I must have got the dysentery when I was in hospital. So whether the food was all right in the hospital, I don't know, but this is what happened.
What did you think to the medical treatment which you got for this?
Well, of course, for the malaria, we had the German course of quinine and... I forget the name of the other chemical, it was a very good course, and they must have been fairly thorough to have pulled me round, there's no question about this. And the nurses were all English nurses of the medical corps. We had the medical corps in the hospital, the Ambala Hospital, and they certainly were very, very helpful to us. Very good. The treatment, as far as I can remember, was very good. I didn't eat much. I don't know what the food was like because I was too ill, and I don't know, I think I did mention to you that I persisted that I left the hospital as soon as I could, so I had no period of being really fit and eating the normal fit person's diet in the hospital, so I couldn't tell you about the food in the hospital, but I would suspect it was a fair standard.
And was this the only time you were sick whilst you were in India?
Yeah, the only time.
Didn't you ever have any intestinal complaints at any time at all?
No, never. And I can't remember any of my colleagues having any problems with their tummies. They must have. What we used to suffer from was, of course, prickly heat. You know, where you get a constant perspiration, used to inflame the pores of your skin, and that used to come out with the appearance of a rash. In actual fact, apparently, it was the inflammation of the skin and the constant, I suppose, salt coming out with the perspiration that used to give you this prickly heat. And also we used to get what we used to call Chinese rot. That was a skin used to peel off the inside of your toes. And we used to take, I think I used to bath my feet in pot permanganate to harden the skin. That's right, that's what I used to do. We used to do this quite frequently, those of us that were interested in physical education and health, because we used to do a lot of running and boxing and football and that, and we used to occasionally put our feet in pot permanganate to harden the skin, so that the soft skin was a result of perspiration, and if you hardened the skin, that protected you from it.
Was there any... Did you get the prickly heat at any time of the year, or did you just get it in the hot season?
You got it in the hot season, and you got it until the monsoons came. And then, of course, all of us who'd been suffering from prickly heat, it applied to almost everybody, immediately the first monsoon storms came, we all used to rush out in the nude and used to wallow in the terrific downpour of water and used to play about with the huge ponds that were being created as a result of the immediate downpour of water onto hard ground that couldn't soak away. We used to have sort of flooding, as it were, for a period. And we used to be tearing out there in the nude. And it was a wonderful experience to feel the prickly heat disappearing as the water pounced on your body.
So it disappeared very quickly, didn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. It was a fairly quick healing process. But it used to last a long time if you hadn't got there.
Was there nothing you could do about it whilst you had it?
Well, the doctors used to give us salt to take, recommend us to take a lot more salt, and I think we used to use some kind of calamine lotion to try and ease it, but it only very temporarily eased it. It was quite a serious irritation.
Did you hear of any other cases of illness in your unit whilst you were in India?
I remember when I was on the frontier, we had two or three people collapse through heat. And if I remember rightly, it was because they were unable, for some reason or other, to perspire. There's something happened in their body makeup. And they used to be put into an ice chest. It was a chest. And I can remember that we used to turn a handle or something to operate this machine whilst we had the person laying in it. I can remember doing that a couple of nights. We did it all night. We used to take turns doing this to keep this going, to cool this person down, because he got sort of very, very hot as a result of being unable to release his perspiration. I can remember that. Vaguely, I must say.
Can we talk about the clothing which you had? You were issued with in India. You described the type of clothing you were issued with in England before you went out. Did you actually use all that clothing, or did you find some of it unnecessary?
No, we used it all. We didn't find it unnecessary, but what we did find, that there was a man, a travelling tailor, used to come in and would change the cut a bit. He'd make it so it looked more shapely. We used to, if you remember, there was the fashion in those days of having wide bottom trousers and narrow at the tops of your legs. Well, he used to come in and put a big gusset in the bottom of the trousers to make them wide, and then he'd alter your shape of your coat so there was a bit of a waist in your coat and this kind of thing. But basically the uniform was the same, but he used to come along and do you up a bit, change you, make it look more stylish. And then there was a period when, instead of issuing you with uniform, they issued you with the material. And we used to have an Indian tailor who used to make your suit for you. And there was little refinements that he used to put in that the service didn't used to give you. For instance, a little top pocket at the top of your trousers to put your watch in, or something like this. And there's various little refinements he used to do to make the suit look a bit more stylish than the old issued suit that the RAF used to issue. In fact, when you got back to England, you were always sort of everybody used to admire your cut in your suit because it was different to the ones that were issued from the stores.
Do I understand that you only had khaki then in the RAF in India? Didn't you have the light blue?
We had the light blue, but we didn't wear it only on winter times, winter times mostly. During the whole of the summer we wore the khaki in winter times, because it was quite cold at times in India, in the evenings particularly. Then we'd wear the blue then.
Did you, on the whole, find that the uniform was satisfactory for Indian climatic conditions?
I think it was absolutely satisfactory, yes. Mind you, there have been years of history, I suppose, of this. They probably had designed it. But yes, the clothes were quite satisfactory. Thinking about it, the shorts were a bit tight, and they used to put a gusset in those so we had a bit of a wings in the bottom of your shorts, so they're a bit wider than the ones that were issued to you. But generally speaking, they were very good. And of course, you had a pith helmet, a helmet with
a brim,
and then a a cloth going round and round and round, I can't think what it's called, and a flash at the side. Your topi was rather an elaborate affair that you used to have. But, of course, if you were going out for a walk in the evenings, you didn't used to wear this. This was a kind of uniform. You used to wear a little old topi that you'd bought. Of course, you weren't allowed to go out during the day without a topi on, although we used to play football sometimes in the afternoon, but, of course, mad dogs and Englishmen, you know the stuff. But it was against the rules, really, to go out without wearing a topi.
Did you have spine pads?
No. No.
You hadn't heard of those?
I believe some army were issued with a kind of, well, it was a pad, I never did see one, but some kind of curtain they used to put round their bodies or something to protect the bottom of their spine. But of course these boys were really roughing it sometimes out in the desert and wherever they were, with very little protection, but generally speaking we'd got protection at night time and during the day.
Can you tell me about the daily routine which you had in the barracks? What time you got up in the morning, what you'd do in a typical day, and how you'd spend your day generally?
Mm-hmm. Well, we used to have a reveille at 6:30, but we never used to get up till about 7:30. There's no sort of discipline as far as this was concerned. Providing we were either on parade in the industrial sector of our camp, that's down at the hangars, by 8:30, or in our respective department at that time, so that the sergeant in charge of the department knew that his people were there on time. There was no query about this. We never had any of this early morning inspections and this kind of thing, much as I believe they had in the army. We just, providing we were at work on time, they didn't used to worry whether we got up 2 minutes before and missed our breakfast or not, providing we were the other end of the other side of the aerodrome. You see, our living accommodation was one side of the aerodrome, and most of us bought bicycles from the Indians and used to cycle across the landing ground to the industrial side where the armory is and the machines were kept, and providing we were at our place at the time, much the same as a factory really, as I said earlier. As far as the early morning routine was concerned. And then of course those of us associated with flying would go and have a discussion about our 6-monthly program that we'd probably got a flying plan, see what stages we'd got in our flying hours, what we had done as far as our plan was concerned, and we would then decide, right, well, this or that ought to be done in the next week, and we would then get down to planning the flights so that at the end of the week we were up to the schedule with our work of flying. Then at lunchtime we'd finish work. We then went back to our billets and we were off for the afternoon, usually having a lay down in the billets. We didn't do any work in the afternoon when it was very hot.
What time was lunch?
About 1 o'clock. Sometimes the people who were not flying, like in their departments, the armory people or the transport people or even the photographic people might go back in the afternoon if they'd got to catch up with some particular exercise that needed doing or some particular work that had got to be done. Guns needed repairing or cameras needed repairing or something like this. They might be done in the afternoon, but generally speaking the afternoon was free. And then in the evenings it was usually sport of some sort, tennis. There was quite an enthusiastic golf group that used to play golf on the landing ground. That's how the days usually passed by.
What, did you have to be in bed at a certain time?
No. There was a lights out at a certain time, but it was ignored. We used to go to bed when we used to feel like it, and you weren't allowed out of camp after a certain time, you see. You mean there was a little area that you could go out of the camp, about a little walk, but generally speaking, everybody was either in the canteen or in their own billets or sitting around talking or something of this sort. You must remember, it's the weather was suitable for sitting about till it was bedtime almost, having a natter and a talk about things. And
did you have any special names for the meals that you used to have at the various times in the day?
Yes, though. What were they called? I've got to think. Lunch was called tiffin. You'd have tiffin at lunchtime. I can't remember the other two, but I believe there were two separate names for the others. Breakfast was something or other, and I can remember the tiffin one. I think it was lunchtime. I can't remember what it was in the evening.
How much did this daily routine differ from the routine in barracks in England then? Was it very different?
Oh, yes, much more relaxed. The discipline was much more relaxed. You had a job to do, and providing you did that job, everybody was quite happy. There's no question of people giving you unnecessary jobs to do merely to keep you occupied. It was up to you to do your job, and then you were almost free agents. Quite often, I would go round and see some of the lads and say, well, shall we go down to the gym for the afternoon, or shall we... We used to work out some kind of athletic exercise that we'd do in the afternoons, and to amuse ourselves and to keep ourselves fit. In those days, of course, it was a very physical period, really. Everybody was proud of their fit body. One or two weren't. They used to be boozers, you know, but generally speaking, we were all comparatively young men, healthy animals, and used to do this. Of course, there was always the concern about sex, naturally. You see, we were all in very healthy condition, and there were supposed to be two brothels in Ambala, and we were given to understand that those two brothel licenses had been bought up by some religious body, and then they'd closed the brothels down. But I must say, it didn't worry me at all, but I know some of the lads used to go out and find somewhere to go to find some girls. I can remember on one occasion, one night, they said to me, come along, let's go out, we've got a... Now, what's he called, the bloke with the horse and cart? I can't remember, but he'll take us out to where there's some girls from college.
Gary Waller.
Gary Waller, that's right. He used to take us out to out into the country where he's got some students at college, girls who are very hard up, and if you pay them something, you'll be all right for a while. And about five of us went out, and there's Gary. And when I got out there, I was introduced to my girl, but I was a bit, I suppose, rather frightened about the whole business. Nothing ever happened between her and I, but I believe the other boys had a good evening. Of course, they went straight home and spent about a couple of hours under the shower bath, then frightened that they'd got some disease or something by going out there. But
were these Indian girls? Or
yeah, Indian girls, Indian girls.
You said they were students?
Yeah, whether this is true or whether this is a sales gimmick on behalf of the Gary Waller, I don't know. He probably thought we wouldn't go if they weren't students at a college, and it all sounds so very attractive to... So, I don't know. But they were certainly nice young girls, and the one that I was with, he sort of directed us to different trees where we'd got to go underneath the tree with these girls, and I sat under this tree looking at this girl, and she was a lovely Indian little lass, and couldn't speak English at all. But sitting there looking at her, and I thought, Christ, this isn't for me kind of thing, you know. So I think I gave her the money, if I remember rightly.
How much was it?
About 10 rupees, would it be? Something like that. Something like that. I think it was about 10 rupees or something.
So didn't you even hold hands?
Oh, yes, we held hands and sort of looked at each other. her waiting for me to pounce, I suppose, and me wondering what the hell I should do to get out of this. I wish to Christ I hadn't left the camp, you know. And so that was the situation. Oh, yes, we looked. And I must say, she'd got beautiful eyes, and it could well be that she was a girl from the college, because she was certainly much more, much cleaner and much more pleasant-looking than some of the poor little things we used to see wandering around the streets in Mbala.
What was her demeanour? Was she? Did she smile at you? Or
oh, yes, very much so. Oh, yes, she was quite free. She was smiling, not in a "it's about time we got started" sort of attitude, but smiling in a very nice sort of coy way. And I think it was this kind of feeling that she was such a young kid, and that although I was comparatively young, I felt somehow that she didn't realise what she was probably letting herself in for. She'd got this very nice look on her face.
You said that, by and large, the question of sex didn't worry you. Did it worry the RAF men generally, do you think?
Oh, yes. We used to have lurid tales about how the men used to go down to married quarters when the married person was on duty for some reason or other. You know, the man was on duty. And, of course, from about May till October, all the women and children went up to Murray for about 6 months. And the airmen went up to Murray for about a month. And we used to hear all sorts of tales about what was going on between the young, healthy airmen that were going up there for a month and the wives who had left their husbands down on the plains for 6 months. And it was quite often that a married airman would apply to the CO for compassionate leave to go up to Murray, because he'd heard rumours that his wife was enjoying herself whilst he was down on the plains.
And would he get her?
Pardon?
Would he get the leave?
Oh yes, always, always. And also, if you got associated in somehow or other with a girl, Anglo-Indian or an Indian girl in the hills or anywhere like that, and the CO had got to hear about it, you had to make application, for instance, if you wanted to marry the girl, anything like this, you see. He used to immediately post you to another station or bundle you off back home, but usually post you to another RAF station to break the contact that you'd made.
So the RAF, you felt that the RAF definitely frowned on liaisons with...
Oh, absolutely.
Anglo-Indian
girls. Oh, there's no question of this, yes.
Did you have any... Did they give you any reason for this?
Well, they felt that... I think, looking back, they felt that we were a healthy lot of young men who would have been carried away by the urge for sex against our better interests. You know, the fact is that we got no contact with them.